Good Monday morning, Spokane. You're listening to Praxis, where theory meets action, talking about national, state, and local politics. And today I'm on with a good friend of mine, local business owner and political nutcase like me, yes. John Waite.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm excited about spring and sun comes out. I rode my bike yesterday and the world is all right for
good.
A day.
Good.
Yeah.
Have you been? I heard that you were. You've been nabbing bike thieves on Main Avenue.
I nabbed a bike thief. I got really riled up the other day and saw a bike theft in progress. Bike theft in progress, and I called the cops, and they never showed up, and so I kind of took matters in my own hands, and then I went all and chased this guy, some kind of like Hollywood chase, and chased him around downtown, and I actually got him, and the cops showed up. The bike people won.
Nice.
One battle.
Nice, good. Finally, we win a battle.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everyone's had their bikes ripped off. I was kind of just tired of that happening without any kind of action.
Nice. Well, there you go.
Yeah. And I didn't get killed or stabbed or anything.
Good job. Vigilante justice.
Vigilante justice.
Being around all those comic books.
Vigilance is part of vigilante, you know. Vigilance. Yes. Somebody said that, one of my right-wing people. I laughed. So
they are all about that.
They are.
Yeah, so did you listen to my show last week?
I didn't yet.
Okay, well, you can't. It's my fault because it's not online yet. But
it will be, though.
I'm getting my Facebook page up today.
And when it is, I'm excited because you were talking about...
Yeah, I was with my friend Emmett, who I don't think you've met, but he caucused and went to the county convention, the Republican County Convention for Ron Paul.
Mm-hmm. Ron who?
Ron Paul.
The media doesn't acknowledge him.
Well, we are.
Today. Hey, you are the media. I shouldn't say that.
Yeah, and you are too because you're here. So,
yeah, all right.
Basically, I mean, he's a lot like me, but he's a scientist. So he wanted to take this very scientific approach to, does this process actually work? Does it matter?
Oh, yeah.
Can I have an influence in it? So he just decided to start from scratch and go to his caucus and kind of innocently just went and
that's really cool.
Did it all and got elected as a delegate to the county. He's an alternate for the state, but it's probably not going to happen. But
he's trying, and that's great.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and Ron Paul actually swept downtown, swept the 3rd district in our county, and did fairly well in the other districts you might expect, but Romney took kind of the traditionally Republican, whatever that means, those districts.
Neocon corporatists?
Yeah, I suppose. That's a fair label.
That would be my opinion, of course.
Mm-hmm. So, but now, you know, since then, Romney's pretty much just declared, and the media's declared that he's won, even though, in fact, you know, hopefully people realize the process isn't over.
Right. And that's what's frustrating is the process is ongoing, and just the state of modern media, and maybe it's always been this way, and it's just obvious to you and I now, but it's like, you know, it's not over. The Republicans are still having, you know, primaries and caucuses, and the media won't even acknowledge. I think Newt Gingrich finally dropped out or is dropping out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like Newt Gingrich, but it doesn't matter whether I like a person. I don't have to like Romney or Santorum or Gingrich and all these guys. They still deserve their, you know, moment in the process and their due process in this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not getting it.
Yeah. Well, we seem to have a really preemptive media sort of who likes to declare wins in, you know, this time last year before it had even happened. So, but I mean, to what extent, though, do you think the process itself is just for show at this point?
It's really hard. A lot of it is. And so, I mean, you know, my background is I don't want to be a Republican or a Democrat. And that's actually not a slam on Republicans and Democrats. But I've been all over the world and there are other ways to do this. There are nations with many, many parties and many choices and a system where they have like representational democracy. And, you know, if the Pirate Party, as an example, in Denmark got 4% of the vote, they actually got 4% of the representation. So people feel like they're part of the system, so people participate. And I think France, they said 80% of the eligible voters voted in this last Sarkozy election. And we're at, like, what, 15?
I think it might be closer to 20.
Yeah, 15, 20.
But it's
20.
Pretty, it's kind of a joke.
So,
I mean.
And a lot of regular people are just not interested because the way our system is built, you get fed the anointed Republican and the anointed Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in Washington State, we have a top two primary where, you know, you go through a primary, but ultimately the general, there's two spots, and one of them is reserved pretty much for a Democrat, one is reserved for a Republican.
Mm-hmm. And that's something Emmett and I talked about in our interview, because I was saying, well, he was talking about the rules that when he went to the caucus, he signed, and the convention, he basically signed an affidavit saying, I will not participate in any other party's process.
Right.
And, you know, I thought that was interesting, because what if you, you know, what if you're undecided, and what if you're interested in candidates on both sides? If there are only two sides, what if you're still interested in candidates from both?
You can't.
What are you supposed to do? And we didn't have answers for that. Right. So I started to look at it, and I mean, there's no rule written anywhere that says, like, thou shalt not have a third party. But there's all of these processes that have been built up and built up. Like the top two, different states have different
and things. And the media.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the winner-take-all concept of
We have a very odd form of government. And I'm not, you know, without sounding like, you know, a traitor or a terrorist, I'm not sure that it's very healthy. Because it is. It's a winner-take-all system. Just like our form of capitalism is kind of a winner-take-all system. And when you are disenfranchising and blocking people out of the system and then giving all the power and all the money to whoever wins, you're creating a really just a very dangerous system.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I talk to a lot of people who are really idealistic, and I think I'm idealistic too, and I get accused of that a lot. But people who think that it's just a matter of getting the right people out there to vote, and just if everyone voted, it would be fine. And
they're right, but to make that happen, what do we have to do? Like, I ran for city council last year and kind of did it my own independent route, and they're right. And what I found has to happen is you have to have an organization. I mean, we really do need, like, third parties, or we need independents that have, like, a big backing. And because you have to have people on the streets, like, knocking on doors. You have to raise money. You have to advertise. You have to fight the same battle the same way as them. And you're always going to be behind. But the goal, I guess, as an independent is that to capture the message that there's a way to do this, that the other two guys aren't doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of go from there.
But especially on the national level, that seems so daunting. You know, I'd say it's, I don't want to sound defeatist, but it's pretty much safe to say that it would be impossible on the national scale because the level of money that it takes.
It would take a personality. It would take a John Stewart, or it would take
someone who already has power, basically, or influence at least.
Well, what's interesting is, so, you know, we talk about Ron Paul, and I don't agree with all his things, and God forbid if he's, like, racist or homophobic and all that. I don't know if I believe those things. But, you know, essentially he's a guy that people believe in because he's honest about what he is.
Mm-hmm.
And but the powers that be, especially in the Republican sense and in the mainstream media, they wanted nothing to do with him
from the very start. He has a message that's both obviously counter them, and it's also not a soundbite. You know, some of it is, but it's a soundbite they certainly don't want to play.
They don't want to hear
it. For him to say we're broke because we spend money on wars and a drug war that doesn't work. That's a soundbite, but it's certainly not one that's going to get played.
Right.
And then when he starts talking about the Fed and all of that, that's such a complex issue that we can't put it on the news because people will never understand
it.
You know, that whole attitude.
Well, and I suffered through a lot of Republican debates this winter, because I felt like to talk about this, I really needed to watch it, even though it was terrible and painful to watch. And to watch, you know, there were points where Romney would get 70% of the airtime and Santorum would get, you know, 20%. And then Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul would have to actually, like, dance around and wave their arms around and, hey, I'm still here. I'm supposed to be getting questions. And it's just fascinating. And, you know, this is like from the CNNs and the Fox News and the MSNBCs that you would like to think are doing their job as, like, the media. But they're not doing their job as the media.
They should let us moderate a debate.
Oh, man.
Wouldn't that be
fun? Well, I'll tell you what. If they did, and, you know, one thing I'd love to see is if you ask a question, I'd love to see a political candidate actually have to answer the question.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually did some debates that we ran for KYRS a couple years ago for one of the races. And we were kind of sticklers about you have to, like, kind of answer the question. Mm-hmm. You can't, like, go off. And if they went off, we would politely say, well, that's not really what we were asking or talking about.
Will you please address this? Yeah. I'm hoping to do some of that this year, get a couple candidates in here to talk.
Oh, absolutely. That would be great. Because they can't hide from the truth. You know, when mm-hmm. you are willing to say that's not, you know, hey, that's great that you're bringing up military spending, but we're talking about X, you know, mm-hmm. something else. Let's talk about X. You know, you can talk about all your silly stuff on the mainstream TV
yeah,
or radio.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think so with Ron Paul, obviously, so Emmett said multiple times, and everyone I know almost who supports him will preface it by saying, look, don't worry, I'm not a Republican. I just support Ron Paul. And he's not really a Republican
right.
either. He has an R next to his name when you see him
right.
on TV, but he says, you know, he's a libertarian. And I mean, that's a different thing in theory. Well, it's trendy. I think the Republicans will try to say that they're all libertarians because that's what's trending right
yeah.
now. But
they would love to say that, but it's completely not true.
Well, yeah. But so do you think that's his strategy? Obviously, it's his strategy to run as a Republican because then he can be in the debates and he can be in this
Correct.
Spotlight much more than he would if he was just this wingnut independent off on his own. So do you think that when, I'm not going to say if, but when Romney officially is the
right.
chosen one, for the Republicans, do you think that Paul will continue his campaign and that this has just been part of his strategy to illuminate how ridiculous the process is and then say, look, I'm still here. I still have my message.
Right.
You can still vote for me.
I think that that is part of his strategy to remain in the system and have the discussion and have people talking about the Fed and government spending. And let's be honest, like the war on drugs, that's a thing that appeals to me that he fights that. He wants to like lower the exposure of the American military and not have like what we have like 300 military bases
mm-hmm.
all over the country.
The world. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't put myself in his head, and I think he wants to remain part of that. Now, the media is obviously stifling that. Somebody has said that he's going to fight till the end so that if he doesn't drop out, he still has the right to be at the national convention and do stump speeches and say what he wants to say in front of the Republican world. You know, other people have said that it wants to run as a libertarian as soon as the right moment is available. That's a tough road. And then if he does that, he'll take double the heat because
mm-hmm.
all the Republican neocons and establishment, if he does that, they'll be done. You know, if they had any chance of like winning anything, he will finish that. And that's unfortunately the consequence of having like a two-party system
mm-hmm.
is a guy like him. You know, if you kick the legs out of one of the parties and suddenly the other party has their 20% extra
mm-hmm.
or whatever.
Well, but I would think that the Obama campaign would also be fiercely against Ron Paul getting legs under him as a non-Republican because somehow this old man somehow captured the sexy youth vote. How did it happen?
Well, he does. Yeah.
You know,
young people like him. And
because he's honest,
well,
he's actually
honest.
Saying real things. They're so used to
right.
young
well,
people, particularly after getting so wooed by Obama and his
right.
his sweet, sweet words.
Right.
You know,
did you watch the debates at all?
A little bit.
And
every
time he would comment, he would just say what he thinks. And it was actually like kind of like, what is he doing? You know,
mm-hmm.
oh, he's actually saying what he says. And I didn't like some of it. And I liked some of it. And then the other candidates would come on and they just like spew out a bunch of platitudes.
This weird glossy.
Silly, you know, oh, I'm going to speak to young women. Now I'm going to speak to old men. And wow, the message is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. I can do that as a candidate, you know. And he wouldn't do that. And so that was refreshing. I don't know. You know, I've read that people say that he could win against Obama. I actually do not believe that's true. I just would like everyone, including him, I don't know who else really has a right. I assume if the Green Party and the Constitutionalists and the Libertarians have people, I want them to get a chance to talk to the American public.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to say it, but it has to be on TV or crappy mainstream radio. Because that's what most people listen to. Unfortunately, most people aren't listening to KRS.
Yeah.
But we're going to hopefully work on
mm-hmm.
that. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, right now we just don't have choice. And it's staggering that we are a country of choice when it comes to consumerism. Like, it's amazing how much junk we can buy.
Oh, yeah.
But when it comes to politics, we refuse. And that's always been really stifling to me.
I don't know if it's necessarily on the consumer end, though. I'd say I think it's crafted that way so that you either are frustrated by it and refuse to participate, or you have this illusion of making a difference
right.
by voting for one of these two, like, oh, red or blue, you know?
Is that how you feel from, like, 2008 to now?
Sort of, yeah, because, I mean, 2008, I was 18. It was my first
right.
presidential election, and I certainly you know, did vote for Obama and kind of jumped on that train. Because if he had done, I mean, I would still stand by. If he had done even half of the things that he said he would do, then I would be thrilled.
Or if he wasn't just thrilled. George Bush light.
Exactly. I would be thrilled. Right. I don't know if I'd even say light militarily, but he's basically just, he's on par in many ways.
Right.
But I mean, that's
Sadly, he's made the most of his military opportunities, you know, and instead of like, you know, fighting the battle in a different way every moment. He's, I mean, he escalated Afghanistan. There's, I don't like to beat up on Obama because I actually think he's a good guy and he's caught within the powers and the system that's broken. And I think he's really smart. And I think he cares about people. But, like, you know, escalating the wars in Afghanistan, you know, and then, like, he's not doing anything about the Fed and the banking system.
Yeah.
My feeling is we're heading towards another catastrophic banking problem pretty soon.
It's already happening.
It may be already happening. And all these fixes that we've done the last 4 years, you know, didn't trickle down to you and I and didn't help small businesses and didn't help homeowners and didn't help people that were trying to get through school and create jobs and all that. And, you know, the system, my big problem with the Republicans and Democrats is the system is built towards like lobbyists and big money and donations and keeping power. But we kept doing this over and over and over. We're watching the same thing happen that was 4 years ago and people have forgotten history. I mean, I can, you know, I'm saying that, 4 years ago is history. Jesus, it's like modern memory, but it's history to these people and they've forgotten it already. It's astonishing.
Definitely. One thing I would say that, I don't know, it's, I don't want to talk about it for too long, but it's hard for me to believe that Obama's too much of a good guy when he's basically like started the drone program and expanded it so much in Pakistan. I can't say that he cares about people if he's a war criminal, but that's just my view on that.
No, that's, but, I mean, that's fair. That's more than fair. I mean, I am idealistically, optimistically really trying to give him credit. I didn't vote for him. So I actually am really trying hard. And then, of course, here's what will happen is people will say, well, look at the alternative. That's how our country works. You know, if you don't vote for him, you're going to get a guy that, like, wants to have a big military and wants to help the Fed and wants to spend a bunch of government money and stick our nose in other people's business. I'm like, well, that's the same thing, except one has an R and one has
and
a
D. So that process you're talking about of me shifting from that and thinking that that's the way to participate to where I'm at now, which I don't really know how to define where I'm at now, but it was also seeing, so getting involved in activism around then and seeing all these people just high from electing Obama, just like, now everything's going to change. That was really the attitude when he took office.
And I believed it.
And a lot of people did. But then I think that as it started to become apparent that that wasn't what was happening, you know.
Lobbyists, bankers,
fairly
money,
quickly, you know, with the bailouts and everything.
Transparency, accountability.
People who understood what was going on with the bailouts realized that they had been betrayed, you know, by Obama. And then, but so many people just stayed in denial about it. And they're like, we just need to work harder on this thing that's not working.
Well, and how can they work harder? Like, how can you and I work harder? You worked hard and people worked hard to get Obama elected. So you get a guy elected, and then he doesn't fulfill his promises. It's not really a matter of hard work. It's a matter of holding him accountable. And I'm a believer that, like, if somebody is not doing what they said they're going to do, you need to replace them. Now, the problem is we're really in a tragedy because if you replace Obama right now and put in Romney, Romney says he's going to run the whole Bush economic program. Well, the Bush economic program ran us into the ground as much as the Obama economic program is running us into the ground.
Yeah. Well, they're
so,
all based on,
again,
the
we don't have a choice.
The same economic theory that doesn't work, you know.
The trickle-down theory?
Yeah.
We give rich people a bunch of money.
I think just corporate capitalism in general.
Or corporate capitalism.
Yeah, I mean.
Crony capitalism, have you heard that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's, it's really interesting to me. A lot of bigwig writers, I just did Thomas Friedman's The World is Flat. I listened to it. I didn't read it because, you know, didn't have the time, but I listened to it. And three or four of the books I've read about, really mainstream people are talking about crony capitalism. So we don't even really have regular capitalism, and it's really a byproduct of the Republicans and Democrats appeasing, you know, corporate America to get donations to remain in power. So, I mean, we have to look at, I would love to talk about at some point, where could we go? How could we do this? And what's it going to take to kind of create other choices? Because to really, we're not in a sustainable system now.
No.
And if we continue down this road, I firmly believe that like our deficits, our federal deficit is going to bury us at some point. And both the Republicans and Democrats love to add to it. And don't be confused. I mean, anyone that's listening, both of them are talking about adding trillions of dollars to the deficit. Romney is doing it with tax cuts for the rich. Obama's going to do it with expanding spending programs.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to cost people that really work and pay bills like me, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of money. We each owe $50,000 right now. Did you know that?
Awesome.
It's like, and that number goes up at least $4,000 a year. And that's every man, woman, and child. And I think that's hilarious because so this little baby that's just mm-hmm. born like yesterday, I want to have this like little video of them, you know, giving him a checkbook and like, can you, you know, just cut us a check for 50 grand, little baby.
Yeah. My kids aren't paying it. I'm not going to pay it either.
We can't.
They never asked me. And I was never asked.
That's
if
the
I
funny
wanted
part.
To.
Like, you know, if you had to start paying more in taxes to fix this, you'd be like, I don't have any money. You know,
exactly. And that's, I mean, I guess that's the source of the Tea Party's frustration.
It is. And I love them. You know how I really talked about them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were co-opted by the neocons and the extreme right. And essentially, I don't think they're very different from Occupy.
They're not.
At their base. If they really step back and were honest about what they want,
mm-hmm.
instead of putting their weird social and religious moral part into mm-hmm. it also. You know, I don't mind them wanting the government to be efficient and accountable and smaller and all that. I'm not so sure I believe all their talk, you know, when they start talking about like birth control and social control. I'm like,
I think I don't think there's anything wrong with having social programs. I really don't.
I think you have to,
but the way they're set up now, if you have an economic system that's going to put half of people in a financial position where they need to be reliant on your social programs and they also can't pay into those social programs, then it's a recipe for class division and complete destruction of your society. Like, I hate to say it.
And Europe is ahead of us. Like Spain is ahead of us right now. Spain has 25% unemployment. That's whole employment. 50% among 24-year-olds mm-hmm. and younger. Can you imagine half of the 24-year-olds in America not having jobs?
That's pretty close to right
it
now.
Feels like it.
Ours is no. It's pretty close to what
is
our
it?
Numbers are. I think.
I don't know what it is.
Our youth unemployment, which is 16 to 26, I think. Right. I was just looking at this. Is at least 40, but I think it's closer to 50.
Right.
And, you know, aside from the usual things that people say, you know, that will cause crime because when young people are bored, all they do is commit crimes. You know, that's, it's also just morale wise, you know, for country, for its young people to see no prospects.
That's what I think is really depressing. And I feel terrible for your generation because you guys have had the hell kicked out of you like for the last 8 years. And I watch it and I'm just like, man, we had it so much easier, you know, and it was hard. Like, I remember growing up and, you know, we were poor and you were broke, but you could live on nothing and the cost of living was nothing in mm-hmm. Spokane. You could have a junky car that cost you nothing and you could hang out with your friends and watch movies and drink cheap beer mm-hmm. for nothing. And it seems impossible now.
I still feel kind of like that in Spokane.
You've created kind of a unique world, though.
But I think it's because I live in this little commune, you know, where we're all learning skills and taking care of each other, and you know, we're probably communists.
Some people,
it's pretty dangerous.
You could go to Congress then.
I could. Yeah.
The you have created a thing though that's different from a lot of your generation, where they have to go home and live at home,
mm-hmm.
and you have an alternative to that. Which mm-hmm. is kind of nice because it's really demoralizing to go home and live with your parents.
Mm-hmm. That's what I think my generation, but also everybody, you know, should be doing. And that's what I really liked about Occupy was that it was creative. It was kind of saying, we don't care about this system that doesn't work. When I was in San Francisco hanging out with their Occupy, I played a clip of this on my show with Amanda 2 weeks ago. Van Jones came and started mm-hmm. talking. And he had good things to say. He gave a very rousing speech. It was really inspirational. And then he slowly started to talk about Obama and people freaked out. They're like, we have zero interest in electoral politics. That is not what this movement's about, which I thought was interesting because their whole thing. And I heard a great quote about the 60s. I think it was Tariq Ali, who's like in my top 10 people ever, said that the great like gift of the 60s was showing that, you know, another way is possible.
Right.
They didn't succeed, but
they tried.
I wish I had been there to see it, because it was a pretty well, large scale. Like, look, hey, we're doing this completely different thing over here. And that's what I think
now,
we have to do.
Now, there's such a fight. If you try to, like, think outside the box and you try to be, like, creative, people will fight it tooth and nail. And when I say people, it's like the establishment. I'm more of a Democrat than a Republican. I'm happy to say that. And if push come to shove and I had to make some decisions, I'd probably go that route. But, you know, I've talked about elections reform and campaign finance reform and, like, revising the top two general so that people would have choices. And I've talked to, like, some of my buddies that are upper up Democrats. Oh, God, how could I possibly say all these things? And no way, that's crazy, this won't work. And I was, like, trying to figure out what was going on, and it was pretty obvious that they were protecting their power structure. Mm-hmm. So while I appreciate that they're more forward-thinking, they still dropped back into their, like, defending the power base and defending their thing. And maybe their reasons are good. Maybe their reasons are, if I don't defend my thing, then the Republicans are going to, like, win or whatever.
That's really hard, because now, I mean, just down the street, the Dems office is up and running. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have a lot of friends who are staunch Democrats who work so hard on those campaigns. They're great people. Right. We have a lot of the same ideas. But, you know, I just don't think that their way works. And it's made for some tense conversations lately.
Right.
But, I mean,
well,
I
always have to tell them, I don't hate you. I want a thing that you're not providing me. And the moment that I saw them talking about really fighting for, like, open ballot access, expanded party representation, you know, more representation for people that are not Democrats or Republicans, I would jump behind whoever said that. And mm-hmm. I don't care if they're left, right, center, Republican, Democrat. You know, I'm looking for people that understand the system is broken. Mm-hmm. And it's the structural and systemic stuff that needs to be addressed, and not this, like, you know, cutting military spending and gay marriage and, you know, all this. I want people to fix the system.
Mm-hmm.
or do both. Yeah. They could do both. They could talk about all the things that are, you know, tug at people's hearts. But also, I need them to be honest about the system. Mm-hmm. And right now, I'm not seeing any honesty. And that's mm-hmm. why, I mean, I would love to start being able to, like, look for people that want to be alternative candidates. I would jump behind them and help them out. And, you know, talk about, like, on a national level, somebody that doesn't want to increase the deficit, somebody that wants to cut military spending, one that wants to, like, have social programs be tied to education and, like, furthering people's ability to, like, create jobs or get jobs.
But a proven method for that,
proven
not just
methods,
saying it.
Not just throwing buckets of money on you.
Yeah, the fairy money that we talk about so much. This is basically what John and I do normally. I just come over to Merlin's when I get frustrated, and we just go and go. And we talk about
magic
that a lot.
Magic money.
Our Democrat friends who we love dearly, don't get us wrong, and don't be mad at me later.
And
I feel like there's this attitude that's really frustrating for me where, well, we elected Obama and it didn't work, so maybe we just need a bigger percentage in Congress. So we'll just get a few more people in there. And then at the state, you know, we just need four more people. And this whole just, like, sheer numbers power thing, it calls for lockstep thinking,
right?
You know, because you can only elect people who are going to do exactly what you expect them to do. And anyone else who has a different idea or anything too far from what the establishment Democratic position is dangerous and will compromise your block, you know.
And you know what's funny is it's always the outliers that those guys are desperately afraid of that bring great change and bring good things to a system, mm-hmm. whether it's government, whether it's jobs, whether it's education.
Mm-hmm.
But the system itself hates outliers because they're scary and they break up the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And
so, the media doesn't like them either.
No.
Because they require a little more.
And they have
critical
no money.
Thought usually, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. They, you know, outliers don't have any money, so they're not going to buy advertising time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but
and
that's
so,
what's hard for me is that there's always this fixation on finding the person who can, you know, make sure we keep our majority, make sure they're electable enough, and electable and being a good leader aren't always.
Oh, it's
going to
be even
thing.
Worse this year because the battle is so partisan. And that's what mm-hmm. shocks me is after I've been doing this for like 8 years of really committed to like politics and social reform and change. And everything is way more partisan than it was then. And it's getting worse. And I mean, I feel like we're like slowly going down the trash chute, you know, going into the garbage bin, and people are like punching each other as they slide down this chute. I just am astonished that we do this. And but what it is it's this, it's this, it's greed and it's power, and it's on both sides, and it's disheartening, you know. And there's a lot of good that's going on, and I'm sure I'm discounting some of that, but there's a lot of bad going on that these people. When a Democrat does something wrong or a Republican does something wrong, I want them to acknowledge it. That's the first step in being honest about what's going on, is these guys have to say, oh, yeah, this guy was, you know, whatever bad stuff, and we don't like it. You know, he was a pedophile, or he was stealing from, you know, an orphan's fund, God knows whatever, you know, or he's driving around drunk. You know, when a politician is caught driving around drunk, I want his political group to attack him. I don't want the other guys to attack him.
Yeah.
I want the Democrats to beat up on the bad Dems, and I want the Republicans to beat up on the bad Republicans.
Yeah.
And it's hard because they can't, because they have to have that unified front that you've talked about.
Yeah.
And it's
and
a shame.
Unfortunately, the traditional kind of Democratic front, I mean, I don't even know. I would love to hear the stated goals of the Republican Party that we have right now.
It's impossible.
They can't.
No.
But, I mean, the stated goals of the Democrats have always been, you know, kind of take care of everybody, equality, justice, you know.
Right.
But a lot of times what that ends up meaning is preserving social programs that don't work. You know, maybe if we just put more money on it, it will start to work.
Throwing money at it.
Especially if you look at healthcare and education, which are two things that obviously, like supposedly wealthy society should be providing for everyone. Because it's advantageous to have a healthy, educated population. Everyone agrees on that, I hope. But it seems like this process of we've come to basically the least efficient system that you could design. I feel like our healthcare system, the more I work in it.
It's terrible.
The more I find out about it. My mom works in it. You know, I know a lot of people who work in healthcare and who work in helping people with public insurance. It's like they said, here, design a program with the least efficiency possible. And this is what they came up with.
Well, and so that's a perfect example of, like, Obama was elected in whatever, 2008, you know, and so he gets in 2009 and he makes healthcare reform his singular most important thing. And he has a unbreakable majority in the Senate and the House, and he can do whatever he wants. And so he instantly throws a single payer off the table, and everyone's like, what are you doing? He's like, well, I'm compromising. And it's like, well, we haven't started talking yet. Why are you compromising? We haven't even, you know. And so he does a healthcare reform bill that's, 2,000 pages of gibberish that nobody knows what it really is. They don't even know how it's going to affect you and I. There's parts of it that they can't even say how it affects us yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it perpetuates a horrifically broken system. Mm-hmm. And everyone's, well, I guess we have to go along with it because he's our guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just heartbreaking.
And we're going to find out about it in Washington because we're one of the pilot states. We're going to roll out a lot of the aspects of reform before many other states.
Right.
So you'll find out just how
there are
how
things
well
in,
it's going to work. There's good bits in there, but I feel like most of the good bits were compromised away.
And the good bits were like a single page of changes.
Mm-hmm.
The good bits could have been handled in 3 or 4 pages of, like, we need to, you know, pre-existing conditions, transportability of your insurance, all those things could have been handled in a couple pages.
Yeah.
The big thing that's going to happen is the burden, the economic burden that it's going to put on small businesses and you know, people, it's going to be tremendous. Like, it could be enough to put a small business like mine gone, like out of business.
Because you're mandated to cover your employees?
If it ends up being that way, and I'm not sure it is set in stone like that. If it is, I will be out of business, guaranteed. And I'm like, well, that doesn't solve the problem.
Yeah.
And then the other problem they didn't solve is they didn't address that the health insurance industry and the insurance company industry is just, it's raping America.
Yeah.
And I mean, I hate to be so blunt, but it's just...
No, it's pretty, I mean, it's pretty fair to say. I think I read something that like 1 in 5 American families has like severe financial hardship due to a medical expense.
Right.
Which is the amount that we spend on what we have now. Wouldn't it just, maybe this is too radically simple a notion, because I always get called, you know, naive or something when I suggest things like this. Can we just put all of that money into having universal health care like Canada or so many other countries where it seems to work?
Like the 26 other industrialized countries that are ahead of us in health care and, you know, quality of life.
Mm-hmm. Sick people don't pay taxes. You know, sick people don't run businesses.
And in fact, sick people get health care because the way our system is built, you know, if you don't have insurance, you go into an emergency room or the hospital and they have to take care of you. So they are getting health insurance, and you and I are paying for it, but we're paying for it in the most, you know,
in the least efficient way
possible. Least efficient way humanly possible. Yeah. And like you said, they've created a system that is so inefficient.
It's comical, but if it would be comical if it didn't kill people, you know.
And so here's the problem, going back to the two-party system. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So we have this discussion about health care, and Obama's health care reform is garbage and it's not built right. But then the Republicans have nothing. They have nothing to add and no alternative. And so we're caught in this two-party system where it's like, well, we have the Republicans with absolutely nothing to offer on health care. You know, it's going to bankrupt all of us and put all the money into the corporate pockets. Or you have this semi-broken, probably going to achieve the same goal or result of bankrupting all of us, but doing it in a slower fashion mm-hmm. that the Democrats offer. Mm-hmm. That's not a choice. That's not a way mm-hmm. a healthy world works.
Yeah. What I was originally getting at with this is that a lot of people I know think that the solution is just to, if we just spend a little more money on it, you know, if we just put a little more resources towards it, then it'll work. And the question you and I are always asking is, where is this money going to come from?
Right.
Where is this magical fairy money going to come from? That's what we always call it.
Well,
and especially with education, too. You know, our education system doesn't work. I would challenge anyone to prove to me that it does work.
I always get in trouble because I voted against Prop 1 a couple years ago, and I vote against tax increases. And I have a teaching degree, and I've taught in District 81. And when I was in the system, I would see horrific amounts of money being spent on middle management and upper management in District 81, like, you know, the people down here a block away from us.
Mm-hmm.
And the money wasn't going to the classroom. And I can tell you from being a teacher and that the number one thing that they could do to solve a lot of problems is classroom size.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have a classroom of 35 people. That's ridiculous. You can't get anything done. And then
the only kids who get any attention
are the ones that are going crazy,
yeah,
you know, and then you spend all your time dealing with that.
Sedate those kids. If their parents have insurance, they can afford Ritalin.
I was thinking ropes and gags.
Oh, okay.
That's a small cost.
Is that why you don't teach in District 81 anymore?
I would love to.
No. I used to want to. That's the sad thing, is I really wanted to be a teacher until I started to see what that meant right now.
It's hard to be a teacher. So I don't want to ever beat up on teachers themselves, but I do beat up on teachers' unions that kind of defend the wrong things. And I beat up on the system that protects bad teachers. And I beat up on a system, like they just hired a new District 81 manager, whoever's in charge, whatever the title is. And we're having severe budget crisis. Superintendent, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Severe crisis. We're broke. We're laying people off. We're cutting. We're increasing class size, which is a way of cutting, you know, money out of the system. And at the same time we're having all these problems, they hired this person for like $241,000. They gave them a $17,000 increase over the previous person. This is a brand new person that's not even tested, hasn't even been in our system. We gave them a raise because we wanted to buy the best.
Incentivize. Hmm.
Yeah.
And what's funny is that a lot of the best are already here. There's so many innovative, amazing programs going on.
And they work for a lot less.
Initiated by principals, individual teachers, and things like people who have been in this community. Seen what's failing about the system and made something else.
Did you go to LC?
I did.
Yeah, you were real lucky.
I was comparatively.
LC, I subbed all over mm-hmm. the place, and then I taught at Ferris, and I taught at LC, and I coached at LC, and LC is a pretty rocking school.
Overall, yeah. I don't think
they do better than anybody else.
I don't think traditional high school was something that would have worked for me anywhere,
mm-hmm.
but I managed there better
close.
Than
it
I would have anywhere else.
There.
But things like, I mean, the community school, formerly Havermill,
yeah, right.
they're doing they just decided we're going to do this new thing. They mm-hmm. decided last year. And in 1 year, the results that they've had, dropout prevention wise, that meanwhile, groups like Priority Spokane, the district itself, are spending millions.
Oh, yeah.
Millions of dollars on studying what's wrong. What's wrong with these kids that they're dropping out? And at the community school, they asked the kids. They said, what do you not like about school that makes you not show up? The kids told them. They fixed that. The kids stayed in school. How difficult is that?
It's funny because one of the big things you learn when you go to like your ed classes is there's different ways of learning and everyone has their different like ways of seeing the world. And we're not all cookie cutter. You know, some people are like tactile and some people mm-hmm. are visual and some people, you know, are auditory or read. And, you hear this over and over and over. And if you're a smart person, you're like, wow, we should do these things. We should make it so that
we should match a teacher who teaches that way to kids who learn
and,
that
and
way.
Have many different classrooms with many different ways that these kids have a way to be there. And then you go into the system in District 81 and they just dump it all, mm-hmm. In the garbage can. And you just have like 36, divergently different ways of being, trying mm-hmm. desperately to like have a teacher who is overwhelmed by the system in the first place. And it's mm-hmm. it's disheartening.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard because then it again falls on the shoulders of the teacher, right. The all-powerful teacher, to incorporate. Isn't that the teacher's job to meet everyone's learning style?
They're so overwhelmed.
The teacher themselves has a unique learning style too,
Oh, yeah. That to take into account their unique mm-hmm. view. Well,
that's another thing at the community school is I don't want to talk about this for too long, but they match students to teachers. You have a teacher who you can develop an interpersonal relationship with. If you don't like your teacher, you can say, hey, this isn't working out and I want to learn from someone else.
Right.
As it would be in real life, if you wanted to learn anything else.
Choice?
Outside of public school. Yeah. If you
alternatives to something that's not working.
If you were to buy a product, your highest goal.
But look at the system is built. Like right now, I look at the education system and I'm pretty cynical because our numbers, statistically, our numbers are horrific compared to like Europe and Asia. And I've been in the education system. A buddy of mine taught in Japan, so I went in and observed in their classrooms. And they were like spot on and they wanted to learn and they had created an environment where they wanted desperately to like achieve. And we kind of give people a pass here. We want everyone just to go through the system as fast as possible, mm-hmm. And it's a shame. It's not about education. It's about jobs for teachers. It's about moving bodies through the system mm-hmm. as fast as possible. We really need, I hate to say it, but we need to scrap that system. It's sad, along with politics and government. You can add education and healthcare onto these systems. Mm-hmm. All our big systems are so broken, so disheartening.
But there's so much creativity. We can make new ones. We'll sit down in a weekend and just
hash it out. It's funny. What we have to do is we have to be brave enough to say, break the system and start over.
Mm-hmm.
And the people have done that in the past. Other countries have done that. And they've even done it with their whole economy. And within like 4 or 5 years had massive change
mm-hmm.
because they're willing to say what we're doing is not working. But we, unfortunately, in America and even local voters are not willing to say what we're doing is not working.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go back and reelect a whole bunch of people at the state and national level that have failed us for the last like 20 years.
Because they'll do it this time.
Well, they may do it this time and they're afraid of the alternative.
Mm-hmm.
And if we had many alternatives and choices, maybe we could look at the system different. It's funny to me. We're giving the Dems a pass. The Republicans are creating an environment where we're giving the Dems a pass
mm-hmm.
because the Republicans have nothing to offer.
Mm-hmm. You mean the royal we, right?
Royal
you
we.
And I aren't.
No.
But yeah. And a lot of people aren't. A lot of people are frustrated. But
how do we get those people to be involved then? That's the secret.
You have to offer. The thing is, so my whole struggle right now that you'll hear live on this show
as I
figure it out over the coming weeks and months, hopefully weeks, but I don't think that'll happen, is, do you participate? Do you try to fix? Do you try to save the ship when it's going down? Or do you just jump ship and ignore it, pretend it doesn't even exist and make something new in a different spot? Because that's what I think. So I posted on Facebook, you might have seen it, the other day was 1T Day. It was the day that student debt hit $1 trillion.
Right.
Overtaking
debt.
Credit card debt, which is huge in the U.S.
Right.
But the thing about student loan
debt. So is huger a word?
Huger is not a word, but it is now. And student loan debt, you can't declare bankruptcy on it. So while this is happening, many of my friends, almost all of my friends right now are students. Right. Many of them are, if I had gone straight to college, which I did not for a variety of reasons, I would be graduating, most likely saddled with, at least to be safe, probably $10,000 of debt.
I had no savings going in. What caused you to decide to not go to college? I mean, can you say that in a brief?
Yeah, it was a variety of factors. First of all, it was a really poor performance for a lot of high school because I wasn't engaged in high school, so I wasn't there.
So you didn't feel like you would achieve in college necessarily either.
I mean, I had the SAT scores. I took a bunch of AP classes. I have like 50 credits stacked up. At Eastern, you know, I have a lot of credits stacked up just from doing AP, failing the class, but doing well on the test and therefore getting the credit. I found the loophole there. But so it was partially that. It was partially not knowing what I wanted to do exactly yet, wanting to get some real life experience. I kind of felt like I had been in school for 13 years and wanted to go do some life school for a while and then come back to school, because you can always go back. You know, college doesn't close when you turn 25.
Right.
Most colleges. So it was that. It was also a financial decision. I didn't really have any savings. My parents weren't in a position to really help me that much. And I didn't want to be saddled with debt. I was meeting these people who were in their 40s and still paying off their student loans. And it was seemed stupid to me. You know?
And like, no one else went that route that you know, did they?
So, a couple. Not very many. Some, it was a less intentional thing. So mine, I was having an intentional year. And during that first year of working in the world, I kind of realized that it needed to be an intentional longer than a year, during which I've learned all kinds of things. You know, I've learned.
Well, you've learned real world experience. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest to you that I'm a product, obviously, of the education system and have been a teacher. And the biggest thing you can teach people is, you know, this quest for knowledge and to learn and to find things out on their own. You know, really, so much of our education system is built on just filling their head full of, like, you know, stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not learning in my book. And I mean, somehow you decided to learn stuff without paying money for it, which is especially nice.
Well, we have this thing that has compiled all human knowledge.
What is that?
For free.
Where?
It's not free. You have to pay about.
Is this that thing George Bush was talking about?
Al Gore invented it.
The internet?
Yes, that's the thing I'm talking about.
You know what the internet is? It's a series of tubes.
But it's a wonderful, magical series of tubes, because you can find out just about anything.
It is amazing.
That's the other thing that I've learned. The dangerous thing is that you can learn only exactly what you want to, and you can ignore all the other information. Right. So
unless you hit that random Google button.
Ooh, that's a fun one.
And then it sends you on like a whole night of, like, you know, till 4 a.m. of looking at weird stuff.
Mm-hmm. So I was talking about that one tea day online.
Yep.
I was posting about that. And then I heard an interview on Democracy Now. I don't remember the woman's name, but she was amazing, because first she started to talk about, we need to talk to our elected leaders and blah, blah. And I was like, you know, your elected leaders don't care about the quality of college education. College students care about it and teachers care about it. And then she said the magic words of, what has to happen is a boycott. You know, she's like, non-compliance with your loans. That's the only thing that these people will notice.
Right.
So that's kind of
$1 trillion of that.
A direction I'm moving more towards is, you know, don't try to make it work within the system if the system doesn't work. While you're thinking about ways to build a new system, just don't participate.
Right.
You know,
it's interesting to me. It's going to take protest and rebellion to solve these problems, I think, now. And I'm not that kind of guy. I'm not, like, I don't look forward to that. I don't look forward to, like, a world where people are, like, angry and marching in the street. But I think that's the only thing that the powers that be will react to. And they react to money, like you said. You know, if everyone said, I'm not paying my student loans, or everyone said, I'm not paying my credit card debt. You know, and the sad part is everything's been built this last, like, 10 years I've been watching to make it harder on those people that have student loans and credit card debt. All the while, we're printing money to give to the banks. We print money to give to corporate America, you know, and the banks. And it's just amazing to me. So it's going to take some huge, huge steps for things to go the right direction. But luckily, it's going to take, like, we have to talk about it.
Yeah.
And not be afraid of it.
That's important.
Yeah.
I don't know, the protest thing. I mean, I think that that's true, but I also think it has to be done in a way that they feel, because you saw, as I saw last year, how Occupy did a lot of that.
Right.
And, you know, I bet a lot of people were those people. I bet a lot of, you know, big corporate people and especially elected leaders were scared when they saw that.
Right.
I bet that they saw, wow, we haven't seen this many people in the streets in years, and that's bad news for us.
Right.
But, you know, with holding hands with the corporate media as they do, they did a pretty neat job of
beating up
in a lot of normal Americans, air quotes. Sorry, you can't see the air quotes, but in a lot of normal Americans' eyes, they realize, oh, well, those people aren't legitimate. They're defecating on police cars, you know, and that was the image that stuck with them. So that's what we have to figure out.
And how much is the government participating in that? I mean, the government participated in all these crackdowns and everything, and it was just kind of hard to watch. And and so I have mixed feelings on Occupy. I loved it. I loved what they did when they, I mean, September 16th, I think, was the day they announced that they're going to do the thing. September 17th was like their first day, and I was just thrilled with it. And what happened, though, is that they went this leaderless route, and then they went to this like amorphous anything is Occupy route, and they went away from the financial things, like the Ron Paul things that you and I talk about. They went away from like beating up on the banks and getting the Fed under control and having the government and big business accountable. And I don't think it's working. I hope it does. I have faith in it. But they've lost their message. And I think in America, it's really important to remain on message really hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's my, you know, little two bits. I don't know if you agree.
And there, I mean, the part about their message that's stuck, even though it's kind of been tokenized by everybody, is the 99% message. Like,
right. People
get that. That's almost, I think you could say that to almost anyone in America right now, and they would know what you were talking about.
Is it too amorphous, though?
I don't think so, because
like,
it really,
you know,
points
pot,
out.
Legalization of pot and, you know, all the different things. The anti-war guys. I mean, I love all these guys, the legalizing pot guys and the anti-war guys. But is it diluting the Occupy message?
I don't think it is, because if you really look at it, every issue that you could come up with, I would challenge that almost every issue, something that's bad in the world that you don't like,
right. Say
it's war.
Right.
Who is war perpetuated by?
Right.
The 1% of people with institutionalized power
and
money.
Makes money off of that.
Mm-hmm. Institutionalized power creates... Institutionalized power outlaws drugs.
Right. Absolutely.
You know,
oh, I agree.
And starts wars. But that is a broad message, you know. And then it turns into, it's really easy to spin that and say, look at how these people hate rich people.
Right.
They must be jealous.
Right.
It's like, no.
And they just want the world to function.
No, they're oppressed. They don't want to be you. They want you to...
It's fascinating because right now we're going to see over this next 6 months, especially in the summer, you're going to see Europe like just explode. And including, I think London is having the Olympics
mm-hmm. This
summer.
They are.
And everybody and their brother is going to be over there.
That's going to be a
wild
word
party.
I can't say. Yeah.
That's going to be, yes.
It's going to be a show.
A storm of some kind.
Yes. It's going to be a storm and a show. And
yeah,
I'll be looking forward to seeing it. I also think that's, I mean, in America this year.
You think it's going to happen here, too?
I think so. I think the winter was a large factor in things shutting down.
Yeah.
And
it's
I'm hoping, especially locally, I've met some great Occupy people lately mm-hmm. in Spokane, who I'm hoping to have on, ideally next week, because I would love to be involved with that movement in general. I believe in it. I think it's great.
Right.
And I would love to inject a lot of the things I'm focused on into it. But the level of dialogue that I saw online around our local stuff... Unfortunately, it seemed to be a lot of ego. It seemed to be a lot of just weird stuff that didn't make much sense.
Right.
But lately, I've been meeting a lot of really cool, rational folk who are involved.
It's
so
Occupy, especially Occupy Spokane, is fascinating to me because it has grabbed onto these reins of like being leaderless and amorphous. And that's good, I guess. But what it does allow you in the best and most positive way is everyone can kind of fight and do their thing that works for them. So like if you wanted to be involved, anyone that wants to be involved in Occupy can really just have a great idea, present it to other people, try to get people to be on board with them and do this great idea. And then, you know, conversely, like watch for other people that have ideas that you like. Now there'll be ideas that are just like not working for you and you're like, that is not something I'm into. But picking and choosing these things that are great and like going with them. And that would be my solution and suggestion to the Occupy things is pick the things that you really believe in. And then the things you don't, just leave them. You know, mm-hmm. Like I've seen the online things and perhaps been part of some of the problems of the online mm-hmm. things. Because I don't like harbor like fools very well.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, everyone has to do their thing. And if you have a thing that's great, do it. And if somebody else has a thing that's great, do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe that'll something, you know,
yeah.
All this stuff will stick. I do think that Occupy has to figure out how to be involved in the political process. Now, I understand they're worried about being co-opted. Mm-hmm. I understand they're worried about selling out and all that. But nonetheless, if you're not involved in the political process in some way, you're not going to change things. If you're not boots on the street, if you're not like money towards the things you think are important, it's not going to change anything.
Because mm-hmm.
that's what these politicos care about.
I think that's unfortunately safe to say.
Yeah.
So one thing I want to talk about before we run out of time here is tonight is the hearing on the proposed initiative changes
right. In
Spokane.
Right.
So I've been talking about this for the last few weeks because the hearing's been postponed. It's actually finally tonight at 6 p.m. at City Hall. And Basically, what's going on is Councilman Fagan and Salvatore put forward a proposal to amend our citizen initiative process, making it more difficult for citizens to file their own ballot initiatives that they've written themselves. It adds new rules. The, you know, ostensible purpose is to bring it in line with the state rules. And basically everything I've read suggests that that's not really that necessary, and that's not the reason they're doing it. Mike Fagan also said that when he did this, he had envisioned Spokane in mind. Right. They've come forward with some pretty radical proposals that I found very interesting, you know, and, you know, have been generally supportive of. And yeah, so they're really downplaying the effect of it. But tonight that's going on. What's your take on that?
For one, I find it, without trying to be too negative or cruel, I find it interesting that a man that has made his living off of the initiative process in Washington State is, you know, trying to stifle the citizens' initiative process in Spokane. So Mike Fagan doing that seems very hypocritical to me.
Can you explain, like, what his background is?
His background is he works with Tim Iman. He's the Eastern Washington representative of Tim Iman's group. I don't know what the name of Tim Iman's initiative group is, but essentially they make money by doing initiatives on the state level, and they do many of them every year, and they make hundreds of thousands of dollars from this process. And they would say to you and have said to you that this is a citizens' process. Now, I'm going to give Tim Iman a tiny, tiny bit of credit, which I normally would never do. But I have to be honest. I have to be fair about the reality. He said that he does not support these changes in the Spokane initiative process, and it's counter to the citizens' process.
Wow. So what's the point of doing it?
It is, you know, Mike Fagan and whoever else.
Salvatore.
And, you know, I assume Nancy and Mike Allen are going to vote for it, too, want to stifle citizens groups like Envision from being part of the political process. And they're going to wrap it around saying it's confusing and the verbiage is confusing to people and they need a better way to do titles. And they're going to say that
they are the people.
And only the city council is going to be, or only the legal at city is going to do it. But the problem with that is, the process is meant to, like, counter city council and counter city legal. It's a way for citizens to participate and challenge those entities. So the very entities that are being challenged by this process want to usurp the system and take that over.
Well, and we've seen with this police stuff what the city's legal department's made of, in many ways. So.
And then the other part of it is they want to put a financial segment on it, which cannot really in any real way be done. You cannot quantify the financial aspects of these amorphous, like, Envision things. And I don't think it's fair to suggest they can, because they can't, and we all know that.
Because
but they
who could disprove it? You know, it would basically be them just saying, don't worry, this is going to cost millions of dollars, and you're going to pay for it, so don't vote
for it. So what's really weird to me is this is kind of really counter to all the things that a normal conservative like Nancy and Mike and Mike and Steve would believe, because this is increasing government power. This is increasing the scope of local government and taking power away from the citizens. And I think, you know, I think it's just like a big corporate, you know, the developers of Spokane don't like, you know, and just
don't like the idea of neighborhood rights.
Yeah. And it just makes me sad, because, I mean, I think we've shown in our world, and one of the things I like about Ron Paul is he wants to, like, reduce government and make things local, and we're going away from that, and it's very disingenuous on their part.
I think that's where you can have the most impact. So I'm really curious to see who turns out for the hearing tonight.
I think it's already decided, but yeah.
I'm hoping not.
Are you going to go?
You know, I am. Yeah.
I think I'm going to go.
We can go. We can have a city council hearing party.
That would be great.
Me and John. All right. Well, this has been Praxis. Yeah. I'm your host, Taylor Weech. I've been interviewing John Waite. Time just flew by because we do this all the time.
So great.
Yeah, have a great Monday, and I will be on next week, hopefully with someone from Occupy Spokane. If not, we'll be talking about all kinds of local political action, political ideas, things that you can get involved in locally.
And Taylor.
And some rants.
You need to take some calls. You need to, like, go
I
that
am
going to
take some calls. I'm going to get brave and take some
I am
next
so
week.
Excited for you to open up the phone lines. You're going to rock it. It's going to be killer.
I hope my dad will call me.
That'd be cool.
We'll see.
Argue with him online?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
We do. And yeah, I'll have a Facebook page up later today.
Yep.
So have a great day, and thanks for listening.